Welcome everyone to Dr. John Bedker's Leadership Podcast, the podcast focused on leadership. The episode will begin shortly. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Dr. John Bedker Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, John Bedker. Well, I've got two missions today. One is to operationalize the message of the last podcast. There, I focused on the central mission of this podcast, for leaders to do the right thing. As I often say, it is simple to say, but it can be very difficult to do. This difficulty arises from many places, from many people, many institutions. I presented several of these in the last episode. I offered a quote from Maya Angelou in the episode as well. She offered back in 2020 the following: "Hope and fear cannot occupy the same space. Invite one to stay." So said Maya Angelou back in 2020. Well, I posited, and I'm going to do it again. For leaders, choice is simple. We must choose hope. Which brings us to today's episode. I've given podcasts on several current failures of several of our key institutions in the United States. The House of Representatives, certainly for one, their current leadership has been an evidentiary and documentable failure. I went on at some length to detail that in an earlier episode. I've also done podcasts on both the leadership failures and institutional failures of both the Catholic Church and the Baptist Church. Wow, failures of institutions we care about and need, but institutions that currently are not addressing or meeting the needs of those that rely upon them and literally have faith in them. So some very significant institutional leadership failures have been documented on this podcast in recent times. Well, in this episode, I'm going to bring another. The American judiciary. Local, district, state, courts of all types have certainly played significant roles, but it is our highest court, the United States Supreme Court, that is the showcase for the failures by lawyers, judges, and our legal system. Let me be clear, this is not a political opinion. The systemic causes of the current Republican-led U.S. Supreme Court's actions, and yes, inactions, began with a Democrat. Yeah, a Democrat. Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States. His delay in seeking justice may very well be the realization of the adage, justice delayed is justice denied. And so this reality has little to do with politics, but everything to do with leadership. A singer and a songwriter who's now passed away, sadly, was a writer of songs. And as songs so often do, were so very ahead of the times. In a matter of a few words, a few song lines, a songwriter can tell a story of significance and meaning. The song by Warren Zevon, I am recalling, is a song called Send Lawyers, Guns, and Money. Not to be funny or cute, but he was quite ahead of his time with those words and with that song. Sadly, Warren Zevon has passed. And sadly, sending lawyers now can be an impediment to justice. Certainly equal justice under the law, that which is inscribed outside our very own U.S. Supreme Court building. So, what are we as leaders to do? As Maya Angelou said, we have to make a choice between fear and hope. And as I have said, we leaders must choose hope. So I looked at lawyers, judges, and our legal system. Yep. Currently failing the American people. So just embrace that fear. Just accept it. Be okay with it. Fear of what may come? No. Let's talk about hope. I want to tell you about a real lawyer, a real judge, a real justice of the United States Supreme Court, a man that throughout his life strived to do the right thing, to be a leader. This man was an American civil rights lawyer, a judge, and a jurist. He served as an associate justice of the United States Supreme Court from 1967 to 1991. His name is Thurgood Marshall. As we live in this turbulent, polarized, and troubling time in our world, it's essential to have hope and to share hope. Today we do this by telling the story of this exemplary man, this exemplary leader. Thurgood Marshall was born in Baltimore, spent some time in New York City, and returned to Baltimore. He attended the Colored High and Training School. Yeah, think about that. In Baltimore. And he graduated in 1925. He graduated with honors. Well, he then went to Pennsylvania to go to college. He went to a college known as Lincoln University. It's in Chester County, Pennsylvania. It's the oldest college for African Americans in the United States. Well, he went through that program, and upon his graduation with honors in 1930, he received a bachelor's degree in American literature and philosophy. His goal, though, was to return and go to law school. However, Thurgood Marshall was unable to attend the all-white University of Maryland Law School. Instead, he applied to Howard University School of Law in Washington, D.C., and was admitted. While at Howard, he had a great mentor, a person who really cared about him, vested a lot in him, shared a lot with him, really gave him grounding principles to go forward. Hugely important for a leader. This professor's name was Charles Hamilton Houston. He talked about this concept, I'll quote here, social engineering, where he suggested we should use the law. Lawyers should use the law as a vehicle to fight for civil rights. Well, Marshall went on. He graduated in 1933 from Howard University School of Law, first in his class. Okay, so the journey begins for this now lawyer. Thurgood Marshall proceeded. Number of stops along the way. His mentor and he intersected several times. Thurgood Marshall was moved, though, particularly by the courts, that's the Supreme Court's unanimous decision in Brown versus Board of Education, where the Chief Justice of the court, Earl Warren, said the following, Quote, "In the field of public education, the doctrine of separate but equal has no place. Separate educational facilities are inherently unequal." Wow. That's the Chief Justice in a unanimous opinion, Brown v. Board of Education. "In the field of public education, the doctrine of separate but equal has no place." All right. Well, let's get to the doing the right thing part, because I think it's a really important and valuable story for us. In February of 1967, then President Lyndon Baines Johnson nominated Ramsey Clark to be the Attorney General. Okay. Some of you might remember that. But here's the interesting backstory. Here's the story about the leader, a leader, doing the right thing. Ramsey Clark's father was a gentleman by the name of Tom C. Clark. Now, at the time, he was a justice, an associate justice, on the Supreme Court. Fearing that his son's appointment could create a conflict of interest for the nominated Ramsey Clark, the elder Clark announced his resignation from the court. "I don't want that impression of a conflict of interest, and so I would resign my place on the Supreme Court of the United States so that my son, Ramsey Clark, could be nominated to be the Attorney General." Well, the president, President Johnson, long desired to have a non-white justice, said the choice of picking Thurgood Marshall was as easy as it was obvious. So, here comes Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall became the first African American to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court. Marshall, as a justice, consistently sided with the liberal bloc of the court. According to a scholar, William Daniels, quote, "His approach to justice was Warren Court style by legal realism. In his dissenting opinions, he emphasized individual rights, fundamental fairness, equal opportunity, and protection under the law, the supremacy of the Constitution as the embodiment of rights and privileges, and the Supreme Court's responsibility to play a significant role in giving meaning to the notion of constitutional rights." So said the scholar William Daniels. Justice Thurgood Marshall's jurisprudence was pragmatic. He relied on his real-world experience as a lawyer and as an African American. He said that he disagreed that the Constitution should be interpreted according to the founders' original understandings. In fact, at a bicentennial event in 1987, Thurgood Marshall said this, quote, "I do not believe that the meaning of the Constitution was forever fixed at the Philadelphia Convention, nor do I find the wisdom, foresight, and sense of justice exhibited by the framers particularly profound. To the contrary, the government they devised was defective from the start, requiring several amendments, a civil war, and momentous social transformation to attain the system of constitutional government and its respect for the individual freedoms and human rights that we hold as fundamental today. We the people," quotes, "we the people no longer enslave, but the credit does not belong to the framers. It belongs to those who refused to acquiesce in outdated notions of liberty and justice and equality, and who strived to better them. I plan to celebrate the bicentennial of the Constitution as a living document, including the Bill of Rights and the other amendments protecting individual freedoms and human rights. Well, Marshall really was all about many things, including affirmative action, which he considered was both necessary and constitutional. In the opinion, Regents of the University of California versus Bakke, he commented that it was, quote, more than a little ironic that after several hundred years of class-based discrimination against Negroes, the court is unwilling to hold that a class-based remedy for that discrimination is permissible. A little humor. Marshall's, though, perhaps most influential contribution was his doctrine known as a sliding scale. It was an approach to the Equal Protection Clause, which said that the judiciary should assess a law's constitutionality by balancing a sliding scale, its goals against the impact on groups and rights. So what he was saying was really a hugely operational idea. Do the right thing. We shouldn't just look at those words, but we should make sense and meaning of them. Assess a law's constitutionality by balancing its goals against its impact on groups and rights. Really a novel way to think about doing the right thing. Here's another author, Carl Rowan. He says the following, quote, no justice ever supported a woman's right to choose as uncompromisingly as Marshall did. He joined Blackmun's opinion for the court in Roe versus Wade, which held that the Constitution protected a woman's right to have an abortion. And he consistently voted against state laws that sought to limit that right. Thurgood Marshall. Okay. So, what happened? Where did we go from there? This is a great story of hope. Well, then our judiciary begins to unravel. The world's changing. Politics are changing. Well, President George H.W. Bush nominated Clarence Thomas. Conservative, for sure. Probably beyond that. Who had served in the Reagan and Bush administrations to replace Thurgood Marshall. Wow. We know our history from then. A history of not doing the right thing. Of textualism and literalism rather than the concepts of fairness and dignity, of balance brought by Justice Marshall. So, one of the real tests is that test of time. What do people say now about this leader that strove through his whole life to do the right thing? Well, Daniel Moak, legal scholar, said, quote, Thurgood Marshall profoundly shaped the political direction of the United States. He, quote, transformed constitutional law and, quote, opened up new facets of citizenship to Black Americans. Another scholar, Mark Tushnet from the Harvard Law School, says that Justice Thurgood Marshall was probably the most important American lawyer of the 20th century. And in the view of a political scientist, Robert Smith, he was, quote, one of the greatest leaders in the history of the African-American struggle for freedom and equality. in a 1999 survey of black political scientists, they listed Justice Thurgood Marshall as one of the 10 greatest African-American leaders in history. Panelists described him as, quote, the greatest jurist of the 20th century, and stated that he, quote, spearheaded the creation of the legal foundation of the civil rights movement. Wow, what a series of accolades about a man who grew up in a segregated world, sought excellence, achieved excellence, sought law school, achieved law school, went through a number of stops along the way, each time trying to do the right thing, framing his own understanding of the law and jurisprudence, and was guided by the Constitution, by law, and its effect on each of us. So, what do we have? We have hope, folks. We have hope. There are lawyers that seek to do the right thing. There are judges that seek to do the right thing. The judiciary system can, not currently, but can really be a benefit for Americans. And so we have to side with hope that those people are there, that they will emerge, and that they will do the right thing. And so we take the last podcast talking about the theory and operationalize it in this podcast by talking about practice, talking about a failure of our judiciary system, which seems quite clear, but knowing that there is still hope, that we should not fear that all is lost, that there is hope for the judiciary because there are lawyers that will strive to do the right thing. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in. I sincerely appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thank you for tuning in to Dr. John Bedker's Leadership Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please tell your friends, and of course, please follow our podcast and subscribe. Thank you again for tuning in.